Good morning. This is the Senate Education Committee. With us is Senator Dunleavy, Senator Stebbins, and myself, Stevens. We're having a hearing today on early literacy in Alaska, Best Beginnings, and several other organizations. So let's go ahead and begin with that. And we'll begin with Kristen Ramstad. Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. Go ahead, Abby. Are you going to start? And if you just identify yourself for the record. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Abby Hensley with Best Beginnings, and with me I have Kristen Ramstad and Star Lee from Rural CAP and Joy Lyon from AEYC Southeast, and they'll introduce themselves more formally as they have their turn. But good morning. Thank you very much for allowing us some time to talk with you this morning. And we thank you for your support for early childhood in the past and for young children and their families. And we wanted to let you know that there is progress being made in this arena, and we hope that you will continue to work with us to ensure that we don't stop now, but that we keep on doing the good things that are happening. I'm hoping that... And I wanted you to know that this is a collaborative effort that the early childhood groups are engaging in, and you'll see that for the last six legislative sessions, this group of Best Beginnings, THRED, the Alaska Association for the Education of Young Children, the Alaska Head Start Association, and the Infant Learning Association have all come together to say, let's decide on what our legislative priorities are for this year. And you have a handout that describes that and that lists those. We're concerned about the future of our state, as I know that you are. We want to see that there are productive citizens who can help us with a competitive economy. We want to make sure that high school graduates are ready to take the next step, and frankly, that our children are graduating from high school. We want to have proficient readers at third grade, and we want all children to be ready for kindergarten when they show up there, to be happy, healthy, curious, ready for all the things that kindergarten can bring to them. So as we think about some of the bigger issues that you all are working on, such as oil and gas, I wanted to make that connection to that arena and to say that, you know, you wouldn't build a pipeline starting at mile 5, just as we hope that we don't build a system or pay attention to children before the age of 5 when they might enter kindergarten. A couple of facts, just to kind of put this in perspective. We know in Alaska from the last census data that there are some 53,996 children under the age of 5. There probably are more by now. And this year, more than 10,000 children entered kindergarten. Well, there's about 10,000 kids being born every year, so we can think about the cohort of children moving from birth into kindergarten. It's about 10,000 every year. Now, as we think about the priorities for this legislative session, we wanted to call your attention to a couple of things. In the governor's budget, he included $1,042,500 for parents as teachers and $937,500 for Best Beginnings. We also want to talk today a little bit about the quality rating and improvement system and to talk a little bit about professional development for teachers. So to give a bit of a perspective, last year, for the first time, the Parents as Teachers was funded at this amount and Best Beginnings as well. And we didn't request an increase this year. We wanted to continue to work on what we were doing, to build on what we were doing. And we felt like the governor's budget was a good number. As you know, both those programs the funding for that has been cut in the House, and we hope that you will consider ensuring that the governor's budget numbers are what we use moving forward. It's important to know that what we're talking about really is a comprehensive system of early childhood. We're not talking about this program, that program, another program, but how all together these kinds of efforts can make a difference for children in our state. As you know, there's some money and policy that is in the Department of Education Early Development and other in the Department of Health and Social Services. And what we want to talk about today really is more about the education work, but we know that it's all connected and it can't be unconnected. As we think about what we want to share with you today, we wanted to focus first on parents as teachers. And so Star Lee and Kristen Ramstead will share with you some information about parents as teachers.
Thank you, Mrs. Nisbet. Yeah, and Sarah, for the record, if you identify yourself, please.
Yes, my name is Star Lee, and I'm the Alaska Parents as Teachers Coordinator. So this morning, I'm just going to do a brief overview of the program before we go into specifically our Alaska Parents as Teachers program. This is an evidence-based model, and what its primary focus is on is that parents are their child's first and most influential teacher. Especially when we can begin right from birth, early years on, getting these children ready to be entering kindergarten or their next educational setting. So if we look at the four components, these are what comprises the parents as teachers model. We look first at the personal visits. This is really the core to the model. These are all individualized strength-based visits where parent educators go into a family's home for the most part and work with the family. Our educators become highly qualified. They become certified in this parents as teachers model so that it is proven to fidelity to stick with why it is an evidence-based program. What's nice about this is that it's adaptable for different families. We can then observe the family in the most intimate setting, which is their home, and focus on the challenges and the strengths that each family has, recognizing that each family is different. Next, you see the screening. It's the second component. And the screening provides parents with tools to understand their child's development. We can recognize the child's strengths, but most importantly, we can hopefully early identify concerns that that child might have going into their next educational setting. They become more prepared, and our primary focus, too, is if we can get screenings done and early intervention in place, we then probably have fewer need for remedial services down the road when the child does enter K through 12. Third, we have our group connections. This provides parents with the opportunity to share experiences, discuss problems, learn from other parents, support one another, learn parenting practices, and observe their child with other children. It's a focus where families come together and spend some time. They do have a person there, whether it be a parent educator or someone there, that are facilitating that group connection time. Recently, I was able to go to the Sprout program in Homer, and I was able to attend three of their group connections.
And what does Sprout stand for?
Sprout is an acronym.
Infant Learning Program in
right.
Homer.
Yeah.
Clever.
It's the infant learning. And it was really neat. All three of the group connections that were held there were all highly attended by families. And each family did state that it was something that they looked forward to each week. You could see the bonds that parents had with one another. Children, even in the pre-K one, recognized each other. It was neat because they held one group connection at the school that's in Anchor Point, and they were given the entire gym facility. So that was really great because it gave children, room to run. We did parent games where we all worked together. We had a focus for that group connection. Parents were given resources. So a really positive thing. Which brings me to my fourth component, the resource referrals. Oftentimes families are not even aware of what might be available to them in their community. So this program brings that to the family. Whether it be other community services, other programs that might be beneficial to the family, it just offers them, here's your options, use them as needed, and where can we help you get what you need. So really, it's a very holistic approach at families and working with children and families. So I'd like to highlight, though, that the parents as teachers model does not come into a family and say, do this or don't do this. But rather, it's a foundation by which the parent educator helps parents to understand the different stages in their child's life to say, here, your child's this old, here is what is available for your child to learn and grow. Okay. So ultimately, we seek to meet these goals. to increase parent knowledge of early childhood development and improve parenting practices, to provide early detection of developmental delays and health issues, and prevent child abuse and neglect, and ultimately, building on what Abby said in our introduction, increase children's school readiness and school success. So this program is built on the principle that regardless of personal circumstances, all families can be empowered, can gain control over difficult circumstances, and can interact with their children in a way that provides healthy development. So thank you.
Thank you, Star. But before we go on, I believe this, and I want to believe it.
Sure.
But how do we know that it's working? How do we know that a child who has gone through the Parents as Teachers program is going to do better than a child who's raised by wolves? I mean, is there some data out there?
There is. We do surveys with parents that talks about their attitudes and beliefs towards parenting perhaps before entering the program, and then a post. Ideally, it's a three-year time that we spend with the family. And then at the end, when the child maybe goes into their next educational setting or throughout interval periods, we again track, you know, what are your beliefs? How do you feel you're doing? The other thing that I would say is that generally if parents become invested in their children this early on, just from the very beginning, and communicating, learning to, you know, develop that strong relationship with their child, it has been found that parents stay more invested in their child's education throughout life. Hmm. So, I mean, I would say getting...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forgot to introduce Senator, Senate President Huggins, has been here for some time. Yes, Senator, go ahead.
Through the Chair, you mentioned on one of the slides and verbally that, and I was thinking about this before the slide came up, but what do you do when you go into an individual's house and invite you into the house and you may see things that you don't like? And I'm going to try and be as specific as possible. Like, and how do you determine if that what you see that you don't like is merely a different manner of relating to children or raising children as opposed to criminal behavior or abuse? How do you differentiate that? And also, what do you do? Because I would imagine if you report, mm-hmm. you'll probably get less and less folks wanting you to go into the house. In other words, if they think you're coming in under the guise of helping, but in fact you're a spy agency. So how do you deal with that? And,
sure.
And if you can just give me some detail on it.
Sure. The Parents as Teachers national model is incorporating right now a scale called the Life Skills Progression. And what this is it's an assessment that the parent educator uses to when they come into the family to first rate these things. And sometimes some families are actually referred by OCS, and we're kind of given this warning of, hey, here's some family problems. But the idea of this model is really focusing on the strengths of the family, understanding that even though this program doesn't have an income cap, so really we can receive families from all walks of life, we go in knowing that we're going to focus on the strengths. But the life skills progressions is nice because it rates the family just on a holistic approach, and then it helps us see, okay, maybe this family needs more help in this particular area. And so then the personal visits can be tailored to work on that area. We also have found that if you find more than one family that kind of is similar in an area of weakness, that might be a focus of a group connection that's upcoming. So you can really kind of work together and not necessarily telling the family, you know, you're doing something wrong or this is going to ruin your child, obviously, but really building together and building the family.
Yes, one more follow-up. Are you required by law to report certain
yes,
things?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But you would not be invited in, or you're invited into a house, so
right.
If there was an abusive situation, you probably would not be invited, I'd assume. Is that the case or not?
Do you have a specific?
Yes. Hi, I'm Kristen Ramstad. I am the Parents as Teachers Director, and I have been with Parents as Teachers for about 12 years. So we have experienced in many communities where our staff, as mandated reporters, do need to notify OCS of behaviors or situations. Because we are a strength-based program and we have built rapport typically with the families, the best practice, and when it's possible, if they know the family, to ask the family to self-report. Usually our parent educators will sit next to them, we'll help them talk through the process, but it's always better if a family self-reports to OCS. We have, you know, as mandated reporters, they don't know for sure if it's us, but typically in smaller communities, they can guess. There have been times when we've been not asked to go back, or we have been asked to go back once they've been in the OCS system. And it's difficult to build rapport, but if you focus on the health and safety of the child, parents love their children. I mean, they don't, some of these actions they don't know is against the law or over the line. And so it's really that educational piece, working with families around their own family norms. We start where they're at and talk about best practice, what's safe, but also what's culturally relevant and important to them.
Just one last follow-up.
Yes, Dunleavy,
so how many staff do you have that go into and work with families? How many staff across the state?
I can speak for RuralCAP. We have 20 staff throughout the state, four of which are funded through state funding. I think Joy has four now. KidScore has two. There are a total of, I believe, if you look, there were 39 were trained in model implementation, which means last year there were 39 parent educators going into homes around the state.
And then just to follow up to that, and I'll be done. Do you train your staff in different scenarios and case scenarios? Do you also train your staff to make sure that they are very tolerant of some wide parameters on how one raises a child? I mean, I may raise my child in a certain manner in a certain environment. They go next door, and I wouldn't raise my family in that manner, but it doesn't mean it's illegal, immoral, or unethical. How do you make sure that your folks they've got that training so that they've got some pretty wide parameters to allow folks to raise their kids in a manner that parents see fit?
Well, and through the chair, they attend 5 days worth of certification training, which does cover that topic going into the homes. Additionally, they are required to do child abuse and neglect reporting, which does cover the difference between parenting styles, parenting norms, and abuse. And again, we are just reporters. We are not the investigators. And so a lot of times what I coach our staff when they have questions, they will come back and call their supervisors or call me to say, I'm not sure. And we help talk it through and say, what have you seen? What leads you to believe? And then they call and they will say exactly what they've seen or heard or observed or the child said to an OCS worker who makes the determination whether or not that's abuse. So we are not the ones determining it.
And I'll just add to something else with this program that's built into the model is quality reflective supervision. So each of our parent educators have someone or some programs like RuralCAP is large enough to where they have multiple supervisors that parent educators can have these relationships with. And same with other programs where they have weekly visits with their supervisor. So really keeping the communication channels open, which I think in turn would help with someone feeling comfortable saying, I'm not sure about this family. Could I get some more feedback? So.
Thank you. When does the school, the education system, enter into these IEPs if a child has special needs? Does that happen as early as when you're dealing with these children, or does it wait until they actually enter first grade?
Well, through the chair, we work with mostly when they are birth to three, that's infant learning. Mm-hmm. So we are working with infant learning programs. We do serve at RuralCAP. I can speak for RuralCAP. We serve up through age five. So we do help families and children transition into the school district if they qualify and work on their IEPs. And we conduct screenings. And in some of our communities, we're fortunate where there's also distance infant learning programs. Our folks are on the ground, so we work very closely with infant learning. So like out of Bethel, if there's bad weather and they can't get to Mountain Village, our parent educator has been closely working with infant learning so they can help the family get ready for their IEP meeting and that sort of thing.
Thank you. Any further questions? Your presentation is great, but the questions are good as well. So thank you. So please go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay, and I have the next slides. My name is Kristen Ramsad. As I stated, I'm the director of the Parents as Teachers program at RuralCAP. One of the exciting things has been the state's investment in the Parents as Teachers program. But let me give you some background. Parents as Teachers actually first came to Alaska in 1995. Hoonah City Schools brought it to Hoonah through federal funding, and it has been operating since. In 1998, the Fairbanks Native Association also received federal funding to add Parents as Teachers. And in 1999, RuralCAP worked with the University of Alaska Anchorage and started serving 27 families through a demonstration project. It has since grown, and last year in 2012, 996 children in 38 communities were served in Parents as Teachers. One of the great things about Alaska's investment is that Parents as Teachers is a very economically viable program. The average cost throughout the state is between $4,000 and $6,000 per family. It does depend upon where they live, higher cost. So it's a wonderful investment. The investment began...
Is that like $46,000 a year or $46,000 for the entire term?
That's a year. $4,000 a year. And most of them are closer to $4,000. There are a couple of distance communities that might be a little higher. So in 2010, the Alaska legislative body decided to put $300,000 into Parents as Teachers, and it served 92 children in four communities. Last year, we expanded... Expanded that. And the investment serves now 271 families in 16 communities around the state.
Mm-hmm. So just go ahead.
We'll
catch up.
Okay. Well, so it is a model that works in both urban and rural Alaskan communities, and that is one of the beauties of this model, is that it is seamless in Anchorage as it is in Mountain Village or Seldovia or Port Graham, down in Ketchikan, Juneau. And one of the wonderful things that with this state investment, with the expansion that we've been able to do, is we have focused on additional populations. So I can speak, we are serving more military families. The Anchorage program of RuralCAP is now serving J-Bear families, Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Juneau is serving more Coast Guard families. So that's wonderful. Kids Corps in Anchorage is serving teens. They have a great partnership with Crossroads that they are serving teen parents. Another wonderful partnership is that we are serving families in shelters. So in Anchorage, Kids Corps is working with Claire House and helping some of those families get back on their feet. And we are working with the Awake Shelter and helping women get homes and get out of abusive relationships. All of the grantees are working with families that have been involved with the Office of Children's Services, Child Protective Services. One of the other really exciting things is just how amazing an impact we're having in with multicultural and bilingual families. RuralCAP has really expanded into Tanacross, which is a small Native community which doesn't have any other early childhood services. And our parent educator is very knowledgeable on Athabascan culture, and so is involving that in all of our visits. Another exciting one is Sprout actually has a parent educator who's working with Old Believer communities, and she is from that community, and so she is able to get into the houses where no one has been able to get in before. So that is really exciting. And then all of us are working with families with children who are at risk for developmental delays. We have partnerships with our infant learning programs for kiddos who may not qualify and do not qualify for infant learning services, but have some developmental delays. And so they are referred to the Parents as Teachers program to help the parents get ideas on how to help a child's speech. If it's not at the level where it needs infant learning, but they want to encourage some, for example, some speech activities, that is what we do. So again, as Abby stated, we had a $1,042,500 investment last year in by the state in parents as teachers.
Slide your
yes, sorry, the map.
Oh, the map.
This
okay.
will show you the communities okay. we're in. There are four grantees, as we stated before. There is AEYC Southeast Alaska, which is Troy, and it's based here in Juneau. There's Sprout Family Services out of Homer, which also serves Anchor Point, Nick, and I'm going to, and Seldovia, Nunwalik, Fort Graham, and then five Old Believer communities. And RuralCAP, we offer our state-funded programs, our TOPE, Tana Cross, Anchorage, Ketchikan, and Stewart. One of the great things that, at least in Anchorage, and I can speak for that, that's been happening is, again, in Anchorage, only 88 families are being served. We only have funds to serve 88 families, and that's a drop in the bucket. But what we're doing is we are working closely with KidScore and the Infant Learnings to find the neediest families, and we're collaborating all the time to make sure we're not duplicating services, but that we are finding the families who need it the most. And again, this is just a start, and we're hoping to demonstrate the effectiveness so we can serve more, especially in some of the larger communities. So, oh good, the map's back. Are the now outcomes. So these are the outcomes of parents as teachers. Parents are more involved in their child's schooling. They report a higher level of confidence and engagement in parenting, and they engage in more language and literacy promoting activities with their children. Pat children do arrive at their next educational setting, be it preschool or kindergarten, developmentally on target. And we have had children who have been referred to early intervention programs who have exited out before age three, so they haven't even entered the school system. And you guys asked some great questions on how do we know we do this. We have a rigorous evaluation system at RuralCAP, so not only do we look and report on our outputs, you know, report quarterly on how many screenings we've done, how many home visits we've had, but at the end of the year and at the beginning of their involvement in our program, we conduct a pre-parenting survey and then that exact same parenting survey when they exit our program. Parents complete evaluations annually, which ask them some of these questions, so it is self-reporting. We also do a preschool and kindergarten readiness skills assessment as children are leaving. And then we survey the preschool and the kindergarten teachers where our parents as teachers' children go to find out how do they compare to children who weren't in there. And where RuralCAP is lucky, where we have children transition into our Head Start centers, we actually get their Head Start entering data. So we can actually compare apples to apples.
Well, thank you. I could ask a question about you mentioned teen parents,
mm-hmm.
and do you divide your clientele among, I say adults, that may be the wrong term, but adults and teens? I mean, and is there, must be a big difference in how you approach them and deal with them and help them to become better parents?
Well, that's one of the wonderful things in Anchorage, where KCI, all of the programs serve teen parents, and there's an amazing curriculum that parents as teachers has come out to really focus and engage on teens and where they're at and being parents. But the great thing in Anchorage, they do have a teen parenting group, because a lot of times, obviously, teens are more comfortable talking with teens. They will try to pair them up sometimes with a mentor parent, but they do have specialized groups for teens. And we found that just in all the years that I've been in parents as teachers, that is typically more effective, of getting the teens to group together or finding a younger parent educator who can relate better to them.
Interesting. Thank you. Yes, Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just two quick questions. Are you folks also a member of, depends on how you pronounce it, NIAC or NACI?
Through the chair, yes. I personally am. But our agency is not at this stage, but I personally am.
With regard to data and reporting, do you fall under FERPA as well? The Federal Education Reporting?
No, we are not held to the FERPA standards. like infant learning and special ed. I used to work in the infant learning sector, so I'm well aware. But we follow HIPAA and all of the required reporting and keeping data confidential and safe and blinded. So,
thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any data on what the education level of the parents are?
We do. At RealCAF, we do collect that information. I don't have it with me, but I can get you that information.
Can you just give me the seat of the pants answer?
Oh, sure. You know, we have parents, and if I look at RealCAF as a whole, we have parents with masters and doctorates. In different, not in child development.
Excuse
down
me.
To
maybe I asked the wrong question. Mm-hmm. The people you're servicing.
Oh yeah.
People you're.
Yes,
servicing.
The parents. Yeah. Yes, we have parents with master's degrees, all the way down to not to GEDs or not having any.
But there has to be some distribution as a whole bunch of PhDs and.
Right. Masters. Not very many. Not very many PhDs at the higher end, but we do have some families with bachelors, but most do not have. College degrees.
Most have high school.
Yes.
Graduation certificates.
Yes. Okay. Looking at RealCAF as a whole, the majority.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Senator Stedman.
Oh, that was a question.
That's very interesting. Thank you.
Well, we're going to turn now to Best Beginnings, and the programs and efforts that Best Beginnings undertakes. And as you know, it's a public-private partnership, so that there are state funds that go to support Best Beginnings work as well as private funds. And I think that the really important thing to remember is that it's all community-based. It's volunteer-led work that we do through Imagination Libraries across the state, and I'll talk more about that. And also with the 7 early childhood partnerships. We also develop early learning materials for parents, and I think that the one that is probably the most recent, is our Babies on Track DVD and board books that have been distributed throughout the state. And we also do research and public awareness campaigns, and you may have seen most recently the Martin Boozer spot on the Gavel Alaska channel, Martin Boozer talks about how it all starts in the puppy pen. And this is the map of where Best Beginnings is doing work these days. We just recently added one more community to Imagination Library, so there now are 103 communities across the state. And then where you see the blue star with the partnerships, those are in Fairbanks, Matsu, Anchorage, Homer, Juneau, Ketchikan, and Wrangell. And I have a list of the communities that we're working in if you'd like to see that as well. Just briefly, the partnerships work in these four areas. They all are doing work in these four particular kinds of areas, and the partnerships bring people together. There's local decision making, so that that communities really are able to talk together about what's needed for young children there, and it's also culturally responsive because it is so very local. In Ketchikan, for example, Best Beginnings has helped them to fund some training of what they call the baby court team, which means that working with everybody that might be engaged in a child who's taken from his or her home, particularly as a baby or toddler, to ensure that the first placement for that child is what they call the last placement. And it really is has the capacity to serve as a model for all of Alaska. In Matsu, when there was an unfortunate, terrible death in a child care facility, the partnership there worked together with others in the community to do some training in CPR and other emergency efforts, and they trained more than 100 people working together. They also provide some stipends for professional development for educators in child care and early learning programs, and they do lots and lots of free family activities. Again, that notion of bringing families together, helping families to get out in their community to see what's available, first of all, and also to have access to free activities. And in Matsu, they're doing a really good job of connecting the various kinds of early childhood programs so that the pre-K grant, for example, and the Head Start program and the preschools, they're working together to ensure that the most children can take advantage of what's being offered and that that everybody has a place to play with that. In Anchorage, the partnership there is working primarily in a particular neighborhood, focusing on a program that you may have heard about called Ready for Kindergarten, that comes out of Kennewick, Washington, and has lots and lots of great evaluation. There's a handout in your packet that shows the kinds of the funding sources for the partnerships work. And you can see that it shows that there's, with the Best Beginnings funding, which is, looks like this, which is the state funding, and how much then partnerships in those local communities are able to garner from local financial contributions as well as local in-kind contributions. So we require that partnerships do that kind of local work. We think that that certainly helps with the sustainability of their work, as well as demonstrating community support for early childhood.
Could you help me understand this? So the only community I really know well is Old Harbor. Did they come to you and say, we want to do this? Did you go to them? How does it work? Is it all volunteers in Old Harbor, and as I assume it would be? Maybe could you just help us understand how, in a specific community, it might work?
Yes, Senator Stevens, and that actually has to do with the work in Old Harbor is Imagination Library. Mm-hmm. And so with Imagination Library in Old Harbor, yes, it is all volunteers. And typically what we do is put out twice a year an RFP and say we want to help any community to develop an Imagination Library program if they would like to have that. And so what we say is that it's not something that is, we're coming in saying you must do this, but rather a community says we want to bring books to our children, and so we help them to do that.
So it was one person or a group of people that got together and then contacted you?
Senator Stevens, typically that's the way that it happens. And that Barbara Brown, who works on this with Best Beginnings, says there have to be five people in a community. She has to have five names in order to make this happen, because we've learned if there's just one spark plug and that spark plug leaves town, we don't want the program to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so with Imagination Library, which helps develop literacy, early literacy skills with children, we think that it, because of the, every time a book arrives in the mail, in that child's mailbox, he or she makes somebody read it to them. And over and over again. But it is very community-based. It comes from communities to Best Beginnings. Certainly we put the word out that, we are looking to help to expand the program.
You're not doing Pat the Bunny, are you? I mean, because I could recite that by heart.
Pat the Bunny is not one of the books, but but there is another one of the Llama Llama books. That there's a good story in Fairbanks. Somebody was having her hair done at a beauty shop, and so people were talking about Imagination Library, and so somebody started doing this Llama Llama book, and and pretty soon people were picking it up around in the various places in that particular place of business, and so it was one of those books that people were knowledgeable about, because sure, their children were receiving it in the mail. In Alaska, the book comes in the mail every month. It's a cost of about $30 per year per child, and in Alaska, we said that we didn't want this just to be a book giveaway program, but that we wanted to have it be a program that got the whole community involved in reading with children. Therefore, with the organizations and groups of people that we work with around Imagination Library, we ask them to do parent engagement activities. So typically, there might be monthly, perhaps less frequently or more frequently, bringing people together, as you heard with Parents as Teachers, with their group connections work, but it's bringing people together to have a simple meal, to talk more about books and reading, to do some demonstrations, that kind of thing. And one of the questions that we are asked all the time, and that Joy Lyon, my partner here, asks me virtually every time she sees me, is, when is Dolly coming to Alaska? They keep telling us, you're on the calendar, you're on the calendar. Well, we are still waiting for Dolly Parton to actually show up in Alaska, but she said that when Imagination Library goes statewide, that she will make a visit to that state. And so in Alaska, now, we cover more than 90% of the state with the possibility of children being enrolled in Imagination Library. And just to give you some sense of what that has meant in the last 3 years, in March of 2010, just 3 years ago, there were 32 communities in which children were receiving a book in their mailbox every month. As of today, there are 103 communities across Alaska. And you can see in this slide, too, that there were 7,594 children enrolled in just 3 years ago. And right now, there are 20,384 children enrolled. So that many kids, 38% of Alaska children under the age of five, are receiving a book in the mail. And as I said, when that book shows up in that child's mailbox, somebody is going to read it to him or her. We did some research with University of Alaska Anchorage folks 2 years in a row and found that in households and families where children had been enrolled for longer than a year, they had more books in their home, which you can imagine would be the case. They also were more enthusiastic about books and reading, and their parents felt that they were better prepared for kindergarten. And you can see the, in addition to the funding that comes through the Department of Education Early Development, there's a multitude of other sources of funding for Imagination Library.
So, I mean, this has no relationship to family need or income level at all. It's every child, whatever at whatever economic level they might be.
Senator Stevens, that's accurate. Dolly Parton, when she set this up, said that she didn't want any children to be singled out. And so it is available to any child in a community where that is where the program is being provided. Now, a family can sign their child up, but only where there is a program. So, and in Anchorage, for example, one of the Anchorage Imagination Library is focusing their attention on the five zip codes with the greatest number of children in poverty, but any child can be enrolled. And one of the benefits of that is that when kids come to kindergarten, they found this in Tennessee where, you know, this has been happening for many years longer than here. But in Tennessee, kindergarten teachers reported that they knew when children came to kindergarten which kids had been enrolled in Imagination Library, which children hadn't. And those who had besides the fact that they had greater early literacy skills, they also had a common context for understanding, because they had read the same books. They had common vocabulary. They had some foundation on which the teacher could build.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, and in the packet, too, there's another chart with Imagination Library that shows how the program has grown over the years and also gives you a list of where the affiliates are who then provide. Well, there were 29 major affiliates that we work with, and then they help to provide the program to other communities as well. Wanted to share just briefly with you what's happening with the Quality Rating and Improvement Service, or the QRIS, in our state. And a QRIS, or Quality Rating and Improvement System, helps parents make good choices. It's similar to the kind of rating system that you would see for restaurants or hotels. The important part here with this that has to do with early care and learning programs is the improvement part. And so what's happened in our state is that several years ago there were two pilot projects that demonstrated that this kind of thing would be had positive results. And then in January 2008, Best Beginnings, through a grant from the Department of Health and Social Services, created a state plan for a QRIS with help from nationally known consultants, and we brought people together from around the state. And that has kind of sort of lain dormant since then. We're very excited that just recently it was announced that the Department of Health and Social Services Child Care Programs Office has contracted with THRED, the resource and referral network in our state, for a staff person to help move this along. We need to have somebody whose responsibility it is to bring it all together, to look at our plan, to update the plan based on what other states have learned over the years. And frankly, in many of the federal grant offerings these days, there's reference to a QRIS and how a state who is applying for particular grants needs to have a QRIS in place in order to really take advantage of it. So we're hoping that you will join us as we think about what needs to happen with improving the quality of early care and learning programs in our state. And you'll see this graphic is in your packet as well. And this describes the components of a QRIS. And in our state, at least, unlike other states, at this point we think that this would be voluntary for programs. But really, to look at all of the early care and learning center-based programs in our state and how we can ensure that our children are in high-quality programs. So we'll be coming back to talk more with you about this, but we think that we are on the road to having some activity in this area. And because the quality of teachers in an early care learning program is so critical, we wanted to share with you just briefly about professional development and retention of those in our early care and learning field. And I've asked Joy Lyon to share with you.
Thank you, Joy.
Yes, my name is Joy Lyon. I'm the executive director for the Association for the Education of Young Children, Southeast Alaska. So I thought what I could bring today is how all of these programs work together, because in Southeast Alaska, we're the Best Beginnings Partnership for Juno. We support the Imagination Libraries all across Southeast Alaska, and we're the THREAD office for Southeast Alaska, and also Parents as Teachers grantees. And having been in the field for over 20 years now in early childhood in Alaska, I am more excited right now about the progress we're making, you know, and getting the momentum and the traction for really addressing these long-term educational outcomes, you know, of really being able to increase our graduation rates, really already seeing improvements in our kindergarten readiness. And, you know, the first 1,000 days of life are the most important. That's where the family system either makes it or breaks it. That is where the communication and the vocabulary development gap, you know, either gets children right on track with parents talking and reading with their children, or where they fall behind. So really, this right now, we're really, you know, moving ahead with the Parents as Teachers is one of the very few programs that addresses that birth to age 3 age gap. Not gap, but the age. And the Best Beginnings partnerships and the Imagination Library books, you know, enrolling those children right at birth. Then we have a connection with them. We're able to continue supporting them. I just wanted to just show you an example of the support we're doing this month for Child Abuse Prevention Month is Strengthening Families Initiative with help from the Children's Trust. So all of our families are going to be receiving the Early Learning Guidelines Activities book that the Department of Education put together. They're going to be receiving, well, every month in Juno, families receive a Born Learning Bulletin so that it invites them to the different activities for families in Juno. And they're going to be receiving a dad's book specifically for aimed at fathers, because we're seeing more and more, you know, actually at the job fair last week, we saw a single dad with a 2-year-old, and, you know, we were telling him about how to, you know, sign up, how to get childcare so that he could get to work, and we signed him up for the Parents as Teachers program. He was just really excited because they had just moved to town, and he's a single dad, and just coming up on those twos where he's going to need a lot of support. So he was really excited that we had the Imagination Library and Parents as Teachers. And then we're also giving them the Strengthening Families Alaska Style Toolkit, which talks about the 5 protective factors and how families can build those protective factors within their families. So it's the just an example of how once we have a connection with those families, you know, those first 3 years of the child's life, of really supporting that family in engaging with their education, reading with them, talking with them, you know, when they have a crisis, helping them know where to turn for support. You know, that's really where it's at. And with THREAD, you know, increasing the quality of the teaching staff. And we're going to be coming around later this week and thanking all of the Senate's support that for last year of initiating the Roots Awards. So that's going to be piloted in Anchorage to increase the professional development of the teachers that are working with young children. Mm-hmm. So that's another really promising new practice that we're looking at other states, the success they've had in leveraging their professional development and retaining the higher quality teachers. So just in a nutshell, I just really am very thankful to see where we're heading and the groundswell of support that we've seen in the past few years for these early childhood initiatives. And so hoping to move the, you know, keep moving ahead and not have to, you know, recreate again, you know, falling behind again. So
thank you, Ms. Stein. Senator Gardner is with us as well.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you, Senator. So just to recap, what we're looking at this year for the early childhood legislative priorities that we mentioned to you and that you have in your packet. Again, we would encourage the governor's budget numbers for parents as teachers and for best beginnings. And as Joy said, to really thank you all for the support that you've provided for early childhood. You know, again, with that whole notion about, you know, the first 1,000 days, the not building a pipeline that starts at mile 5, but rather we begin at the beginning, to support families so that I mean, we know that parents are a child's first teacher, and we all firmly believe that and want to make sure that parents have what it is that they need in order to make sure that their children show up at kindergarten healthy, happy, ready, and curious about their world. I think that's the thing that when employers talk about the kinds of employees that they want to have and that make the most difference for them, it's that sense of curiosity about their world and being able to be good decision makers and to work together, all the kinds of things that, you know, we get back to that, you know, everything I learned in kindergarten is what has, you know, been kept me in good stead all through these years. So, again, thank you very much for your time. We know it's very valuable, and we appreciate the support that you've provided in the past and hope that we can continue to move forward in this arena.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate all four of you being here and your presentation. It all sounds wonderful. I'm glad to hear what you're doing, and I think it brings families together, certainly, which is one element of it. But I think in the long run, we need to know, is it working? I mean, is there any way of finding out as children age and go through school that when they graduate from high school, they're better off having gone through this than having not gone through it? Is there any way of getting some statistical information that will help us really acknowledge that this is a good thing to do and that it works?
Thank you, Senator. Nationally, now there have been some longitudinal studies which do demonstrate that children who participate in or whose families participate in early learning programs or who have their kids, you know, they're ready to take advantage of all that kindergarten has to offer, that they especially have the social emotional skills necessary and that they have the early language and literacy development skills, that they do indeed do better when they get to school, that they are more typically those who are proficient readers at third grade, which is an indicator of future success, that they're more likely to graduate from high school, to go on to further training or education, and to end up being productive citizens and contributing to a healthy economy. I think that because this is long-term, it's difficult oftentimes for people to get their brains around it, because we can't say, well, in 3 years' time, we'll do this little pilot now, and in 3 years' time, we'll show that, yeah, they're going to, you know, be good earners and taxpayers and all that, because It's over the long haul. And so the only things that we really have to look at are some of those longer-term studies that have been done with programs that are not necessarily replicable here.
Very good. Thank you so much. This is right down here. Holly, Senator Gardner, any questions or comments you may have?
Thank you.
It's been fascinating. Senator Hargis.
Yeah, thank you. There was mention earlier HUNA was, 17 years ago started with the So, I mean, I would assume that there are at least some minor indicators over that length of time about the success or non-success of the program.
Yes, through the chair, this is Kristen Ramstad. I don't have the exact facts, but Nikki Shelton, who is the Alaska Parents as Teachers, one of the trainers, was actually the first parent educator in HUNA. She had started off as a high school and junior high teacher there for HUNA City Schools and heard about Parents as Teachers and brought it to HUNA. And she stated last month, and again, I could get the information from you and I will send it to you, but HUNA has definitely seen improved graduation rates. All families are engaged. They actually run, they used to run the program up through the lower elementary grades. I'm not sure that their funding still allows them to, so I'm not sure exactly, but I can get you that information. But they have seen some results, and they have seen.
Thank you.
So any information you have, if you could provide it to Tim here, he'll see that everyone receives it on the committee.
I just wanted to add about the Imagination Library. In Juneau, we started enrolling children at birth, and that's really where we focused. And after 5 years, we started in 2006, when those babies grew up and entered kindergarten, we saw a dramatic increase in kindergarten readiness. And we saw that across the PAL scores, the MAP scores, and the developmental profiles, mm-hmm. and the parent reports as well of their increased reading with their children dramatically increased from 50% of parents reading with their children up to over 80% of parents reading daily with their children. So we were really pleased with those outcomes, and again, it took 5 years to be able to show that, but it's definitely on the rise.
Mm-hmm. Well, very impressive programs, and appreciate your report. Any concluding comments, Abby, you care to make? Certainly, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Thanks so much. Yeah. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.